And because I'm a servant leader, it has created a lot of stress and angst on me because at the end of the day, I have responsibility. Mm-hmm. I am responsible for all 70 associates. I am responsible for all of the shareholders. I'm responsible for the bank that, right. that gave us a line of credit. I'm responsible for the board members.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime professional recruiter, coach, and creator of the Chief of Staff Scaffold System. Let's get into it. So let's get into today's topic of servant leadership. There's a lot of leaders out there that may benefit from knowing what a servant leader is and is not. I have Ed Wolf, CEO of Airwave, with me today. Ed, welcome and thanks for being with us. So can you tell our audience first a little bit about what Airwave is and what you do?
We are the market leader in managed Wi-Fi for multifamily. The business started in 2019. We've got 60,000 units on the platform today, which represents 30% of the NMHC 50. And we are
NMHC 50, defined, please.
Yeah.
For those
National
listening that don't know.
Housing Council.
Okay.
And so in essence, Carol, we future-proof every unit because if you can imagine, every unit has 19 to 21 devices that they are relying on Wi-Fi to to power, right? And so people say, 19, how is that, Ed?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Your Ring doorbell, your Nest thermostat, your smart tablet, your TV. I mean, it goes on and on.
Yeah, got it. So I know you and I have known each other for a long time, and I know you're super passionate about culture and what it means to be a servant leader. That's a term that a lot of people use, right? Servant leader. Define what that looks like for you.
So how I look at this is it's all about paying it forward, Carol, and doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going
to
do it.
So that's integrity to me. Yeah.
100%.
Being your word. Yeah.
But what I found is just, again, over a 25-year career, a lot of people say it and don't mean it. Or they say it and don't do it.
Yeah.
Right? And
lip service.
That's what I call authentic leadership.
Yeah. So what's a specific, you know, give me one specific example where being a servant leader paid off for you. Could be at Airwave, it could be prior when you were at LeaseLock or some other company.
Okay. So for me, I love developing people.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to use an example, Carol, of an individual that I had the good fortune of getting to know when I was at RealPage. And I brought this individual in from outside the industry, which is not typical. And what I saw in this individual was a passion and a desire and a willingness to be coached.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I brought this person on board. We hit it off famously, and she got promoted and ran product success. And then when I decided to leave that organization and go to LeaseLock, she was the first person I called. Why? Because she exhibits the attributes that matter most. Compassion, empathy, a willingness to grow, learn, and be coached. And that doesn't happen all the time. And so with that said, right, that's where me investing in her and enabling her to be the best version of herself has manifested itself in her now growing to be at the pinnacle of her career. So I recently submitted her for the Women of Influence Globe Street Award.
Okay.
Because she, in my opinion, she was deserving of of being submitted for that award.
Mm-hmm. So you've said a couple of things, which is going to kind of make me go off on a short little tangent over here about this individual. And it brings up for me two different things. One is self-awareness, right? And I had this conversation earlier with a CEO today, in fact. And, you know, he was really on the ball. And as you probably know, there's very few CEOs I speak with that are really self-aware.
Yep.
Surprise. I mean, that may surprise some people that are listening to this, but it's true. And he said to me, "Oh, I never really thought about it that way. I'm going to put that down and give that some thought," right? That the importance of self-awareness. My question is, if you look back to when you started, you know, mentoring her, coaching her, right? Giving her the training she needed to be a great leader. How self-aware was she at that time? Was she self-aware enough to realize that, and that's why she turned into what she turned into?
I think that's right, Carol. You nailed it. I think that she was self-aware and was receptive to the coaching, right? You got to be receptive.
No, right.
And so to your point, I love what you just said about self-aware, because I can tell you there are very few and far between that I have interacted with that are truly self-aware. And
right.
I call those that aren't self-aware tone deaf.
I love that. Yeah.
They are clueless and I can't help them, right? I mean, I can coach, I can encourage, I can bring, you know, out blind, you know, blind spots that are clearly there, Carol, but at the end of the day, I mean, I'm telling you, what you just said resonated. Being self-aware is so critically important. And when you're tone deaf and you don't see it, that becomes your demise.
Yeah. Well, and I completely agree. All right. And the second thing, when you said, you know, you left RealPage and took her to LeaseLock with you.
Yeah.
Right. Is the other situation where leaders leave companies and take them, their favorite employees along with them.
Right.
And, you know, clearly she wanted to continue working for you. So that says something about that relationship, right, that you've talked about. But, you know, what kind of blowback does a leader get when he or she does this, right? Because I've seen this for, you know, since I've been in the business since, you know, 1992. What's that, going on 34 years now? And it happens all the time.
It happens all the time. It's not received well. But at the end of the day, Carol, people follow people.
That's right.
Right? And so you can't control the culture that was created.
Correct.
Right? And then, right, you can't also control the individual to the point where they aren't getting invested in. And so therefore, right, I go back to people follow people. Look, I had an interesting conversation today, Carol, that I'm sure is no surprise to you, but it was inspiring to me. This is a private equity firm, and the private equity firm says, "Ed, we look for leaders first. And once we find the leader, we then can build or buy a company around them." And it tells me something when a leader has a cadre of executives that will follow him or her.
Oh, yes.
Because that tells me something about their leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it resonated with me, right? Because that they are a private equity firm that it's all about leader strategy. Leader strategy first. So, you know, I'm here to tell you that, you know, for me, I really am passionate about building a culture where people are empowered, people are enabled, and they can make decisions on their own. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength.
Right.
And I don't want people to ask for permission. Ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I love, yeah.
Now, these to me are basic. Mom and apple pie. I mean, Carol, look, I'm an old dog, right? I've been doing this 25 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not perfect. I have flaws like everybody. Mm-hmm. But I have compassion and empathy.
Yeah.
And above it all, I want to invest in others because significance is a top 10 for me. Mm-hmm. I want to create a legacy,
right,
in the people that I touch, mm-hmm. the people that I inspire, the mm-hmm. people that I lead. Mm-hmm. And if I can do that, I've succeeded.
Yeah, I agree. And when you talk about following leaders, you know, I've seen, like I said, for my whole career, examples of people following leaders on to other companies. And it doesn't always work out so great for the people following them. Right.
Yep.
So let's, I do want to digress here for a moment since we're talking about that and talk a little bit about, you know, the nation of sheep. And I know I'm being a little judgy, a little strong, that just follow somebody on the promise of this is going to be the next great thing.
Right.
And I'm sure there's more to it than that, but often, sure. You know, I've seen it and I could give you countless stories that I have seen of people that I know that this has happened to.
Yep.
You know, they bring them on board. I think of something one of the last searches I did before I pivoted my business away from doing search full time with a company. It was a cybersecurity company headquartered in Israel. Big surprise. And the one of the members of the board who was the CEO of a former client of mine, right? They'd hired me to do a ton of work for them over the years. And he recommended his former head of sales. Who brought over all these people that used to work for them at the prior company, right? That I had done a ton of work for, that knew nothing about cybersecurity, and every single one of them failed.
Ouch.
Right? Every single one of them. These were all salespeople. They just fell right on their ass. And, you know, I have to bring up the fact that people have got to just not blindly follow someone. Just because you're a great leader doesn't mean you're pulling them into a situation that's going to be great for them. I mean, hopefully you are, you know, and I always say, I hope it's not an effective strategy, but hopefully you're doing the right thing by them and really looking at, can this person succeed in this organization?
Mm-hmm. Now keep it, I'm with you 100%, spot on. Now, yeah. Carol, let's also, you know, interject this point. Right? Because it works both ways.
Yeah.
The leader is equally putting a risk in this.
Correct.
By bringing the person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That may or may not make it.
Yeah.
Right? Right. So I just go back, it takes two to tango. But now what you would hope is that you would have radical candor and you wouldn't follow someone blindly and that you would know what you're walking into. But that doesn't always happen.
No, it doesn't. Right? I mean, go on, yeah.
No, no, that doesn't always happen. And then you have to learn a hard lesson.
Yeah.
And it could be painful.
Yeah.
For both.
Yeah. And you know, it has me think of, you know, startups. I tell people all the time, listen, here's the reality. When you go to a startup, there's a first-time founders have a greater probability of failure than success. Doesn't mean it's just a greater probability. Doesn't mean they're going to succeed or fail. It just means they have a greater probability of failure. Multi-founders, you know, right? Multiple time founders have a greater probability to succeed, especially if they have a history of success.
Yep.
Right? But it's, again, not a guarantee. So those people who are looking at those, you know, I have said to people countless times, well, who's the leadership team? Have they done this before? Are they a bunch of, you know, Gen Zs? Right. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot. Who are their advisors? Who's on their board? Who, you know, are they bootstrapped? Who's backing them from a venture capital standpoint? Do your research. And then let's not forget that only about 1 out of 10 venture funded startups, you know, turn back a massive amount of money. You know, then there's the other 9, of which maybe half of them return what they spent, so they break even, and the other bunch they lose on. So they're banking on that one to make them so much money that the losses and the breaking evens, you know, are handled in a way, you know, that it's a financially a good thing, right? You know, so that's one of the things I think about, right? You know, so yeah. Just, you know, I feel like I have to point that out since we're talking about it. How do you think a leader can tell if they are a servant leader?
Well, now this is going to sound cliche, right? I mean, I am a big fan of assessments, right? And it doesn't have to be DISC. It doesn't have to be Myers-Briggs. No, it doesn't have to be StrengthFinders, right? But I do think an assessment helps reveal some things, right?
I agree.
It's not the end all be all, but I do love 360s.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
Because I think 360s reveal what people may or may not know.
Yeah.
What people may or may not want to share in a confidential, anonymous kind of way.
Yep.
And sometimes it's hard to live here, right? Mm-hmm. If it's not all good. But I think, and this is, I'm sure you've heard this, Carol, about, you know, leaders, I don't think leadership can be trained. I feel like leadership is inherent in the individual. Like, now, again, this
but it can be developed.
It can be developed. I agree with that. But, you know, I think that there are fundamental attributes that an individual has to have innately in order for them to be able to lead. That's just my belief, Carol. You may not agree, but, you know, are leaders born or are they made?
Yeah, that's a $64,000 question. I don't know, right? Because if I look at my own history, and this is not a history that's just me, right? I mean, we have been around long enough and we have seen it. I'm sure you have seen it. And maybe you resembled this, right? Where you were an individual contributor and you were a star. And guess what happens next? Oh, we're going to put you into first line management. And you fall on your ass. That's what happened to me. And that's what happened to, you know, a very good friend of mine. And, you know, and a friend of mine down in Florida right now, she's been moved into a new position. She's getting no help, no coaching, no leadership help, no nothing. And I mean, she's wonderful, but she's only going to be able to do so much.
Right.
With what she has. So for me now, did I have those skills? I probably had those skills. Mm-hmm. What got in the way for me was my own, of course, which I didn't find out till many years later, was my own trust and intimacy issues, which caused me to be overbearing, untrusting, a micromanager. Let's, you know, come up with all the other negative things that were in that, right? Uh-huh. I was a horrible, horrible manager. Horrible. But I am not a horrible manager anymore. I'm a really great leader. My people love working for me. Right.
Right.
But it's getting, you know, we talked about blind spots. It was getting those things out of my blind spot.
Yeah.
And being able to put structures in place so that those things no longer negatively impacted not only my personal life, but my business.
And that can happen.
Yeah.
For sure. Right. But then I go back to resiliency.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in your case, and so the thing that I will tell you, I preach this all the time, right? Because I'm very passionate about things. And this is one of them. And I say this to my executive team. And then in turn, I'm asking them to cascade it down. We are not going to put people in positions where they can't be the best version of themselves and have them sink or swim.
Love it.
It's not happening on my watch. Right. So if they've never been a manager before, let's not throw them into the shark, into the lion's den, right? Let's give them tools. Let's build capabilities in these individuals versus dependencies. And let's do checkpoints along the way to make sure that we're setting these individuals up for success.
Right.
Because I've seen it time and time again, Carol, as I'm sure you have.
Yeah, of course.
Right? You just said it.
Yeah.
I've been in that predicament. Ed, you're fantastic. You're a rock star. You're a manager. Congratulations. Do you have a playbook?
What's that?
Well, yeah, what's that?
You know, it's interesting. I want to talk specifically about this because, you know, as you said, Airwave was founded in 2019. So just about 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And this is your first role as a CEO.
Yep.
Okay. You've been with much larger companies.
Yes.
You are also, so you have about closing in on 70 employees at Airwave.
Yep.
And an interesting thing here is, as you said to me, you are the third CEO since that company was founded.
Yep.
Since Airwave was founded. Again, not my first rodeo with seeing things like this happen. Often,
right.
I could tell you a multitude of stories I've seen with, you know, CEOs, with heads of sales, you know, we're on our sixth head of sales in 7 years, you know, it's
right.
Like, oy vey, right.
Yeah,
so this is your first role as a CEO and yep. you're the third CEO since their inception.
Yep.
So let's talk about that a little bit. What moving into this role for you,
yeah.
right. As already a servant leader and a leader that people want to follow. What do you think has made, what have you discovered as, you know, the chief of this company with probably just a mm-hmm. chairman of the board and, you know, various board members, you know, at
yep.
above you or to the side of you, that has surprised you since joining Airwave as their CEO?
Okay.
Now,
okay.
Just over 2 years ago.
Surprised. So that, you know, I wasn't sure what you were going to ask me.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically on that, what I would say to you is this has been much harder than I could have ever imagined because I have multiple constituents that I have to serve. And because I'm a servant leader, it has created a lot of stress and angst on me because at the end of the day, I have responsibility mm-hmm. in my top 10 strengths. Mm-hmm. I am responsible for all 70 associates. I am responsible for all of the shareholders. I'm responsible for the bank that
right.
that gave us a line of credit. I'm responsible for the board members,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So like at the end of the day, Carol, right? This has been the most challenging situation I've ever been in 55 years. This is no walk in the park. There was a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I have an incredible loyal team
mm-hmm.
that has followed me
mm-hmm.
because if I didn't, I'm not so sure I would be here. So again, I'm just a very passionate
yeah.
person that wants to leave a legacy
mm-hmm.
and make a difference. And so this was much harder than I ever anticipated
mm-hmm.
because of having to serve multiple masters.
Yeah. What are some of the mistakes you've made with regards to that, do you think?
Taking on too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Never saying no.
Mm.
Wanting to please too many people at my expense.
Mm-hmm.
And not reflecting on the good and focusing on all the things that aren't where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, Ed, have you stepped back and reflected on all the good things that have been accomplished? And so I'm guilty as charged. Mea
yeah.
culpa.
Yeah. So, you know, in not saying no and serving many masters and taking on too much, I am curious because this is not, I mean, you are not the founder, obviously, but this is very common among founder CEOs, if not just CEOs in general, right? But certainly common
right.
among founder CEOs. How have those things impacted your personal life? If you're willing to talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, let me say it this way. I have not done a good enough job of balancing work and home. And I'm just being vulnerable mm-hmm. with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the family understands it, fortunately, mm-hmm. right? Because they've seen me mm-hmm. as a driver and a go-getter and very passionate. And what I've learned, and it's taken me time, is to balance what can be done in a realistic time frame and to embrace the moment, acknowledge and accept the joy, right? Yeah. And not take things personally.
Right. That's good. And you know, as long as your family understands, because like I said, this is so common. I hear, yeah, my family's at the very bottom of the food chain right now. They never, you know, and that's, and you know, some of these founders have young kids at home. I mean, your kid's not yeah. young, but still.
Right. Right.
You know, I'm sure you might want to go.
Yeah.
To
fortunately, you know, our kids are not young and they are pretty self-sufficient, but you can't take that for granted either.
No, you really can't. So are you able able and willing to talk about the sort of mistakes that I'm assuming the board that they dumped two CEOs prior to you, what some of the issues were or not?
I think
I know
I'm
you shared
better,
some things with me, but I'm sure they were yeah. in confidence. So I need to ask you the question.
Yeah, I think I'm better, you know, avoiding going down that path. But you know, what I will say is, you know, the board has acknowledged the work that's been done mm-hmm. and the trajectory mm-hmm. we've been on over the last 24 months. Mm-hmm. And so that is personally satisfying because, look, everybody needs an attaboy.
Yes.
Everybody needs acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes, okay, that I just love.
Yeah.
And you probably know this, Carol. People will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget the way you made them feel.
Yeah, right.
And that resonates with me.
Yeah.
Because creating those moments mm-hmm. is so important. Mm-hmm. Like, we went to Spain over the summer. And oh, by the way, we were in the middle of closing a convertible note, Carol, right? So it was like hell on wheels, okay? Yeah. And we were gone for 2 weeks, right? This was the first time we were taking the kids abroad. And, you know, I'm in the club lounge at the hotel, and I have the attendant looking at me saying, can you conduct this call elsewhere?
Yeah.
And then the kids are like, Dad, we're on vacation. What are we doing? So, but where I'm going with this is, you don't have the luxuries of deciding that this isn't important.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And you have to prioritize accordingly.
Right.
It
right.
goes with the territory. And so I always find it comical when I talk to my peers, right? CEOs, presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't work past 5 o'clock. I said, who do you work for?
Yeah, right. A bank.
I don't respond to email on weekends. Really? But what I'm saying is that I'm not looking for sympathy.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that the punchline here is I take things very seriously. Mm-hmm. I'm very passionate about what I do. Mm-hmm. I have a big heart and care deeply about people personally yeah. and professionally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I've had to learn, and it's taken me time, is you can't take things personally.
Right.
And you have to pace and sequence. Mm-hmm. And prioritize what's most important. And, yes. Carol, above it all,
mm-hmm.
self-care.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm a big advocate of that.
Investing in self-care is critically important. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people fail to do it.
What was it about Airwave that had you join them, right, when you were reached out to by those who reached out to you?
Yeah. I saw a wonderful opportunity to build and assemble a team.
Yeah.
Again, because I really love doing that. Wi-Fi is even more coveted and important than running water.
As you have pointed
out. And I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to, I was a insurance, a transactions executive. Mm-hmm. This is consultative. It's a slower sale, but yeah. It still has impact.
Yeah.
And how many times in your life can you bring a team that has worked with you before and mm-hmm. bring them with you?
Right.
Not often.
Yeah.
And so that's why I did what I did when I did it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, we talked a little bit in our prior conversation about your sales cycle and average deal size and so on, and that your sales cycle is about 270 days, which is a fairly long sales cycle. You know, is there a way, I mean, is it possible and is it in the realm of possibility for that to be shortened? And is that something that's, you know, even on your plate right now?
So we shortened it, Carol. It was 360 days.
Uh-huh.
We shortened it to 270. And yes, we kicked off our SKO sales kickoff mm-hmm. in January. Mm-hmm. And then we are continuing to do a series of overcoming objections.
Got it.
With the goal of doing a better job of qualifying.
Very good.
And reducing the mean time to submit a proposal and get a yes.
Yeah. Interesting. I love that. So let's, you know, looking at your career, as I said, this is your first job as a CEO. You've been at it just over 2 years. Where do you go from here?
Well,
not that you're looking for a job. Let me just point that out.
My aspiration is to write a book, and yeah. I am actually talking to a publishing company next Wednesday.
Awesome.
So that's on the bucket list.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is to continue to grow this business yeah. in a very profitable, meaningful, and thoughtful way, mm-hmm. and to be able to give back to the shareholders what they entrusted to this company back in 2019. And I think above it all, Carol, I want to leave a legacy.
Yeah.
And it's a legacy that I'm proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we go from here.
Yeah.
It's what I call onward and upward.
Yeah. Ed, is there anything that we haven't talked about that I haven't asked you that I missed asking you that you want to talk about before we sign off?
I don't think so. I think this was a really fruitful conversation for me. I feel like we touched a lot of ground
mm-hmm.
and covered a lot of areas. You know, here's one thing I want to leave you and mm-hmm. the audience with. And I ask this to people from time to time, right? Because life gets busy
yep.
and you forget. I think each person has to be very intentional around growing professionally and investing in yes. their career,
mm-hmm.
right? That could be a executive coach. Mm-hmm. That could be attending trade shows and conferences.
Mm-hmm.
That could be going back to school. That's getting a certificate program. I don't care what it is. It's, you said it. You have to make the time, invest in you,
mm-hmm.
right? In order for you to be accretive to the company that employs you.
Well, Ed Wolf, CEO of Airwave, I always love talking to you.
Likewise, Carol, you're a blast. I was looking forward to this all week. So thank you for the opportunity. Until next time.
Pleasure is mine. Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.